You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. And this is indeed Holder Tonight, heard Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Saturday until 9. Abe Lincoln couldn't get elected today, huh? Well, it's the hat. I don't know. I know Nixon got elected twice in the television era. What's that all about? Anyway, still to come on the program, we are going to talk to Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. We'll also find out about Black Theater Workshop's upcoming shows. Dr. Michael Mastrocola, the optometrist, will be in studio to check your eyes. Make sure you look at the chart on the radio when we get to that part. But right now, joining us on the program is Steve Kettman, who is the author of One Day at Fenway. What a great idea for a book. You may have heard Stuart Nullman on the program a couple of weeks ago review this book glowingly. We're both, Stuart and I, both Red Sox fans. So Steve is on the line with us right now. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. It's a great idea for a book. How did the idea come up in the first place?
Well, actually, I was sitting at a Mets game on a miserable night at Shea Stadium, with an editor, a book editor, and he came up with the idea just because we thought, there's a lot of kind of cutting-edge things happening with book publishing, trying to push the boundaries of, narrative nonfiction and reported books that try to use reporting in new ways. So we had the idea to put to work more than a dozen reporters on one day and have them following different people around at Fenway Park, as far away as South Korea and Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic as well, and just try to capture as many different slices of life that day as we could.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let's back up a second.
Sure.
You said South Korea?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Well, as a Red Sox fan, you're all too familiar with the highs and lows of relief pitcher Byung-Young Kim, the submariner.
Yes.
So he's not a guy who provides a lot of insight into either his character or, really what he's about as a baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried very hard to line up having a Korean-American journalist in South Korea to watch that game last August 30th with his parents. And I found the reporter, I did all the work, and his parents were willing. But BK said no. So my next pick was his high school coach at Kwangju High. And so I had a reporter watching the game with the high school coach, even though it was about 6 or 7 in the morning there.
Mm. Now, you said you came up with this idea sitting with an editor at Shea Stadium, which, by the way, I won't hold against you.
I appreciate that.
But why did you end up picking Fenway? And the
well,
Red Sox.
That wasn't easy at all. I had been a baseball writer for the San Francisco Chronicle for several years and a hockey writer before that. So I'd been to all the American League ballparks, and on my own, I did a tour of all the National League ballparks. And, there's a lot of great ones, but I think it was the history of Fenway and also the sense that this Yankee-Red Sox rivalry, the sense that I had even a year ago that it was building towards something. And, I think that was a pretty good bet I made on that. On that possibility.
By the way, what team do you have your allegiance to?
Well, as a journalist, you root for the story, and as an author, you root for your book. So, obviously, if the Red Sox win the World Series for the first time since 1918, that's awfully good for my book.
It's good for your book, but where is your heart?
I love those Joe Torre Yankee teams that did so well, but right now I'd love to see the Red Sox win. I like this team, and I did the book because a big part of me is a Red Sox fan. I grew up with the Giants, the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
And I think the team that you grow up with, I cheered Juan Marichal when I was just a little kid, and the team that you cheer when you're a kid, I think, is your team. But then later you kind of develop, you can't be a full-on fan in the same way you are, but I definitely love the Red Sox.
Yeah, I did hear you say the Yankees, though, a second ago.
No, I said I really respected the Joe Torre Yankees.
Okay.
And, for example, one character in my book is the film director Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers.
Right.
And, he was there at Ted Williams' last game with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pete Farrelly took his young son, Bob, to this game last August 30th. And, Pete Farrelly is as passionate a Red Sox fan as they come. And he's making a Red Sox movie now, High Fidelity, which is actually shooting in Toronto right now. It's all about a diehard Red Sox fan. And even Pete Farrelly, in the book, talks about how it became a lot harder to hate the Yankees during the Joe Torre era, because those guys did go about it the right way. but they still have the same owner, George Steinbrenner.
I was just going there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got some great stories from Cashman. Told me some great George Steinbrenner stories.
Okay. Now, we're talking here on CJD with Steve Kettman. The book is called One Day at Fenway. By the way, you can see his website, which is www.kettman.com. That's K-E-T-T-M-A-N-N.com. I have some questions I want to ask you about how you got these reporters together. We'll discuss that in a moment. This is Montreal's News Talk leader, CJD 800.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800. This is indeed Holder Tonight, heard Monday through Friday until 10, Saturdays until 9. We are talking with Steve Kettman. He's the author of One Day at Fenway here on CJAD. Now, you mentioned you had all these reporters. One was definitely in Korea, South Korea. Where were the others strategically placed? How many were in total?
More than a dozen. With some of the positions, it gets ambiguous to count. But one thing I wanted to do is, you know, I wanted a book that baseball fans would like, but also a book that kind of tried to rip the whole thing up, you know, deeper by the roots and try to take a look at it from some other angles. So I tried to get some reporters involved who weren't necessarily baseball writers. For example, there's a woman named Samantha Power who wrote a book called A Problem from Hell, which is a study of foreign policy and genocide.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that won the Pulitzer a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
She's a great reporter and also a huge Sox fan. So I put her with Theo Epstein for the game, and that worked out great because, you know, it was something completely different than what he was used to.
Now, did you have any reporters who weren't into baseball?
Let's see. Yeah, my girlfriend's from Germany and had only been to maybe one game before, and I put her with Grady Little's wife, Debbie. And that was fascinating because Debbie, as a lot of your listeners will remember, Grady had a very tough time,
mm-hmm.
especially later in the season. But it's tough being a Sox manager. So getting the view from his wife, I think added a lot to the book. I also had a reporter with John Henry, the billionaire owner of the Red Sox, who is a very private man. If you like, I'll tell you stories about how shy he is. And then also Larry Lucchino, the CEO. We interviewed the umpires at length. We interviewed both managers. We interviewed both GMs. We had someone inside the Green Monster where they still put up the scores by hand. So with one of the guys out there putting up the scores by hand.
So how did you go about deciding which day this was going to take place? This was August of last year, right?
Yeah, last August 30th, and I had decided that I wanted it to be Red Sox-Yankees, again, because I had this feeling that it's a great rivalry. You know, I don't know if it's the greatest in sports or not, but it's definitely a great rivalry. And so I wanted to kind of get a slice of life of that rivalry. And then I wanted Pedro Martinez to be pitching. If it had been this year, you know, it would have been an option to pick a Curt Schilling day. But last year, it was definitely all about Pedro, as it is going to be again tonight.
So were you concerned going into this? I mean, you never know what's going to happen. You set all this in motion, and something happens like, oh, I don't know, a rainout or something.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was terrified. I put 2 months of setup into this. I spent so much time coordinating all these logistics. My phone was ringing constantly. And like you say, it could have been a rainout. It could have been a long rain delay that just put, you know, that kind of put a damper on things. Could have just been a plain lousy game. So I was really sweating it out, believe me.
Okay. Now, I don't remember that game in particular, so what did happen in that game?
Well, Pedro was pitching against Andy Pettitte, and the Red Sox jumped out to an early lead. And in his career, Pedro's only lost a handful of games with an early lead. But he blew the lead, showing signs of weakness very early. And then the Yankees went ahead. And then late in the game, the eighth inning was the pivotal inning, and the Yankees scored in the top of the eighth. But then the Red Sox came back. Mariano Rivera, the great closer, walked in a run, which is something very, very rare in his career, and the Red Sox pulled within one run. But then in the ninth, BK came out, and I had his high school coach watching live in Korea as he gave up a home run to Posada that iced it for the Yankees. And then even though it was still the top of the ninth, South Korean TV just cut away right then. They'd seen enough.
So what you're saying is even in your book, the Red Sox can't win. What do we have to do?
Well, exactly. I mentioned Pete Farrelly and his son Bob. As they were leaving, Bob looks up to his dad and says, "Dad, why do the Yankees always win?" But then I go on to talk in the epilogue how I believe that this Henry group, Lucchino, is going about things the right way. They hired a great young GM in Theo Epstein. He made some bad moves early, like signing BK, for example. But he's made a lot of great moves, and I think he'll just keep getting better every year. I still like their chances this year. I think they'll win the World Series this year.
We are talking with Steve Kettman, who is the author of One Day at Fenway here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. So this must have been a big battle plan he had to do to put this thing into place in the first place. But once the day was over, you end up with this, I would assume, reams of information and different stories. How do you then put it all together?
Well, I guess basically just wing it is the honest answer. I had so much, and then I had to just sit and watch the game itself over and over. The way the book is organized, I spent about the first half of the book introducing my main characters, which is about two dozen characters, and really trying to tell this story in human terms, as a story of these people. But then in the second half of the book, I do take the reader through the whole game, almost pitch by pitch, definitely inning by inning. So what I did was, I concentrated on telling each story, and, you know, if there wasn't enough good material on a given character, then I would just drop the character. But I wanted to capture a variety of people. You know, for example, Euclides Rojas is the bullpen coach of the Red Sox. Most people don't know who he is, but he escaped from Cuba on a raft with his wife and small son. And, you know, those were the kind of stories that I really enjoyed telling, just to show who these people were who come together to make a baseball game.
It's a fascinating concept for a book. We are talking with Steve Kettman, who is the author of One Day at Fenway. We have just about 10 minutes to go with Steve here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800, and this is indeed Holder Tonight, heard Monday through Friday until 10, Saturdays until 9. We are talking with Steve Kettman, who is the author of One Day at Fenway. You can also check out his website, www.kettman.com. That's K-E-T-T-M-A-N-N.com. When it comes to dealing with Fenway Park, that in itself is a character, is it not?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was the real answer to why I chose it, just because it's got so much history and so many people have written about it and talked about it and gotten excited about it and tried to unravel the mystery of it, that it exists in people's imaginations to a degree that I don't think any other baseball stadium does. I could compare it to the Montreal Forum, but if I can give a local reference, that mm-hmm. place was great.
Yeah, it was. And since you bring up the situation with Montreal, now, I've been to Fenway on several occasions. I love going to Fenway Park. And I remember going to Expos games here in Montreal back in the days when the team was battling for first place, and of course Blue Monday and times like that, when 50, 60,000 people used to go to Olympic Stadium and the place was absolutely rocking. And as great as it was in those days at Olympic Stadium, it still didn't have the same sense of community that the fans at Fenway seem to have.
Yeah, I think there's something unique there, and I don't know quite why that is, except one thing I explore in my book is the way that for generations now, grandfathers to sons to grandsons and so on, the Red Sox have been passed on, really, you know, back to the, whatever, 1918, 1920s, 30s, and I think that those decades of fan intensity kind of, you know, one on top of the other, stacked together, they really make it this thing where it really is, it's like a family heirloom or something that's passed on, and that people take it so seriously. A lot of people have, I don't know if it's a joke or it's something very serious, but they've talked about how in New England there's so many people holding on for a Red Sox victory that in nursing homes all throughout the region, if the Red Sox were actually to win it, they'd be, you know, pulling out the gurneys because there'd be people cashing in the chips right then and there all over the place.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I wouldn't doubt it either.
I think you can say the same thing, by the way, in Toronto about the Maple Leafs, but let's not go there.
Yeah.
Now, you must be disgustingly happy with how the book has turned out. What about the people who are involved? For instance, the very shy John Henry that you referred to. Have you heard from some of the people who are involved, who were subjects of this book, and got their reaction as to the final outcome?
Yeah. I mean, everyone seems to be so far really pleased with how it came out. And at the end of the book, as I mentioned briefly, I do predict that the Red Sox will win a World Series under John Henry. So obviously the organization was pleased. But John is a very quiet man, a very shy man. when he grew up, his family had the biggest house on the block, and they had the biggest yard on the block. So all the neighbor kids would come over and play ball games in his yard. But young John Henry was so shy that he would stay inside looking out the window, too shy even to ask if he could participate in the game.
Really?
So, you know,
wow.
That's the kind of detail that I put in the book about him. And another one, for example, where, you know, last year there had been that kind of famous, call it an incident or moment, when George Steinbrenner had gotten so excited during a Red Sox-Yankee game that when the Yankees came back and won, he actually started crying. And I'm not talking a sniffle. I'm talking tears down the cheeks. Well, later on August 30, the game I capture, John Henry was sitting almost alone in his owner's box with Larry Lucchino, and he said, "You think George will cry after this one?" you know, the New York Daily News excerpted that one because it was, and it got a lot of comment here. And I think when John saw the book, he had some second thoughts about having given that kind of access to his private life.
Now, with the success of a book like this, and it is doing well, right?
Yes, it's doing very well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
With the success of a book like this, has it given you ideas to doing similar books, either with other baseball teams or maybe even other sports?
Yeah, or even beyond sports.
Or even beyond sports.
I'd love to do a book like One Day in Iraq, looking at one day from all different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm waiting on that front. I'm waiting for it to calm down a little bit. And on sports, I'm still looking for the perfect idea. Do you have one? Is there one that you'd suggest?
Well, I'm going to be biased and pick, because we're here in Montreal, I pick either the Montreal Canadiens. Well, of course, that's moot point now in the base with a hockey strike. But
yeah.
The Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I would, from an American perspective, probably the Dodgers.
Yeah, I grew up with the Giant-Dodger rivalry, and I would love to do that. The other thing I would love to do is I cover the 1994 Stanley Cup playoffs,
mm-hmm.
The finals,
right.
Between the Rangers and Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And that game, of course, went 7. And I would love to do a game 7 in the Stanley Cup final. And again, with good access and with a whole team of reporters. Because there's just nothing like it, especially in hockey where no matter what you do, the puck is still a puck. And it can still flop on its side. It can still wobble in the air. And I love that about it. That there's always the element of chance.
Actually, now that you said that, because there's no guarantee that there will be a Game 7.
Well, and that's why I might have to wait years.
In any given year, but on that same note, why not a day at the Super Bowl?
Oh, that's a great idea. The main problem there is that every year for the Super Bowl, an army of reporters descends. It's gotten up with net journalists and so forth. It's many, many thousands, I believe, now that cover it. And they're all desperately searching for their own little scrap of insight and fresh perspective. And so it's ground that's been covered pretty well. That was one reason I think why my book works, because at the time, of course, everyone in New York and New England was paying a lot of attention to it. But it was forgotten soon enough. August 30 of last year, it was a regular season game. A lot of the themes that I explore from that day are the same themes being explored now. But it had a uniqueness or a distinctiveness. But let's do this. You gave the website www.kettmann.com, KETTMANN.com. Well, at that website, it has a contact form, oneday@fenway@aol.com is the email. If any of your listeners has any ideas for a one-day book about sports, I'd love to hear them.
Okay. And I have another one day for you, but you have to work fast because it's going to come up pretty soon. Regardless of who wins, one day at the presidential inauguration.
Oh, at the inauguration. I've been thinking about Election Day.
No.
I wanted to have a reporter with world leaders all over the place, just as they watched the results and as they found out whether it was Bush or Kerry. But Inauguration Day is an excellent idea. The main trouble would be getting access. But I think that's a great idea. I'll give that some thought.
Well, I think your book right now is definitely, because you have to deal with the Secret Service, the State Department, and a whole bunch of people, but I think your current book is a great calling card.
Well, thank you very much.
The book is called One Day at Fenway. It's written by Steve Kettmann. You can go to his website, which is www.kettmann.com. That's KETTMANN. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us, sir. Continued success.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure.
News is next here on CJD. On the other side, Dr. Michael Mastrocola will be in to check your eyes. This is Montreal's News Talk leader, CJD 800.